The Netball Show with Flyhawk, raising the bar for netball and women's sport.
It's the Netball Show with Flyhawk. Welcome to part two, as Britt from the Netty Life has been speaking to Lisa Alexander about her thoughts on that Diamond squad for 2023.
Former Diamonds head coach Lisa Alexander joins us on the Netball Show. So Sophie Garbon is a very interesting topic, and at the moment she's being played, I would say, out of position from a Diamonds perspective in goal attack at the Magpies. She was signed there last season for the first time. With that in mind, they wanted a goal attack to feed Shimona Nelson, which has always been an interesting idea because Sophie never really played that role for Swift. Certainly she played goal attack coming up through the ranks of the Australian Pathways, but never quite played that goal attack role for the Swifts that Collingwood are expecting her to play. Now, we're almost a season and a half now into that experiment of having Garbon down at Magpies in goal attack. She put just two shots up in half an hour of netball in the past weekend gone, and we know she's a player that really bases her game on confidence. Like you say, she's never had a problem performing for Diamonds, and she was probably the game changer for us in the Constellation Cup in goal shooter. So I think that warrants her selection here. But whether she makes that final 12 will be very interesting, because I believe Danelle Wallum has X factor. Mm. And although she is quite new to the top level of netball, she is a bit of an ace up the sleeve for Stacey Marinkovic, because not many other nations will have a full intel on how to play against her. And she's very unpredictable. And we saw that in that game against England, where she sunk the goal with seconds to go and won them the match. So where are your thoughts around Sophie Garbon? Because I think at the moment, probably the fight for that position is between Wallum and Garbon. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I do. I mean, now that Glasgow's not in the contention at the moment, that's probably the big decision around what do you do. And that's the one where they've got to make that, like I said to you before, they've got to think of the whole balance of the group, what's going to be best for the group. Sophie obviously has got experience with a number of the players within the environment already. So, you know, Danelle has as well now. So it's a matter of who the selectors and the coach think are going to, you know, bring that world-class element to a Netball World Cup against lots of different players. And I'd be thinking, who is going to be the one? Particularly, I think New Zealand are going to be really strong, and we don't get to play them that often. We don't get to see them as much is probably the key. England play a lot more, so you do see a lot more footage of them. So New Zealand, and particularly with their two defenders back playing, Berger and Watson, I mean, they're going to be a whole step up of defensive pressure. So that is a huge consideration for the selectors and Stacey, because they can't just go on quad series. Those two are being most likely will be in the team, and they are really strong.
And how difficult a position is Nicole Richardson in? Because she is the assistant coach of the Diamond. She's committed to this idea that Sophie Garbon is going to be a goal attack. And yet we have a situation where she'll be in Diamond's camp soon, the two of them together. And she's probably not in the best position because she hasn't had that experience over the past 6-7 weeks. So how difficult is that to navigate as head coach for perhaps a Stacey, knowing that you're in constant contact with the Super Netball clubs throughout the season, and we have a relationship here between Marinkovic and Richo. We have a relationship between Richo and the Magpies, and at the moment they're all not in sync. So how difficult is that to navigate as coach?
I actually literally don't know, because I never had that issue other than, when I had Julie Fitzgerald as my assistant back in the day, and people probably can't even remember this, I don't even think she was coaching Swifts at the time, because she'd moved to the AIS. So it's difficult. There's no other way to say it, because it is really testy, I can tell you, between the national coach and the club coaches at different times, particularly when there's a disagreement about how to handle a player. That's, you know, I won't go into more detail than that, but it is testy. So yeah. I'm sure it's testing them, and it's, you know, whilst Nick is, she's a pro and wouldn't be you know, really she's concentrating on Collingwood when she's doing that. And she doesn't have anything really to do with the selection of the team and the squad. That's the other thing that needs to be clear. Of course, Stacey will talk to her about players and things and what she sees, but at the end of the day, she's not part of the selection process. So, you know, she can hand on heart say to Sophie, look, you know, of course I'm saying backing you, but I'm not a selector. So the difficulty is that she's putting her in that position for Magpies and expecting her to, you know, be able to then go into the camp and play shooter. But to be fair, Sophie can play that role very well. I've seen her. When I've taken her for practices back in the day when I was national coach, she easily transferred between the two. She's much more, I feel like she's more comfortable in shooter. So it feels like she's going home. Does that make sense?
It does.
Goal attack's such a hard position for her to play that when she goes back into shooter, it's like, oh, I'm breathing a sigh of relief and I'm back to where I love. So I think that's what she brings to the Australian team when she goes back to shooter. In fact, playing goal attack's not going to hurt her in many respects in terms of other than her court craft in the shooter position. But I mean, the game's very different, Brittany. Look, this is what I said in my recent article on the Super Shot. You know, for 20 minutes of the game out of a 60-minute game, they're playing a different game, especially the shooters. So, you know, swings and roundabouts.
I want to ask you about that article in a sec. I just got one more question on Diamonds before we get there. You named Tipper Dwan as your development player for that shooting end.
Yeah,
Tipper, this year, with a Tracy Neville in the mix in the coaching stocks at Adelaide Thunderbirds, looks like she is comfortable again in goal attack and finally getting a starting position because she was in such a great position at Firebirds when Greta Boetta had the season off with pregnancy with her first bub. Then her situation became a bit more confused because she shifted to Adelaide looking for court time and didn't get any. And finally this season, her combination with Cardwell just seems to be, like you said about Sophie, home. It just seems to work. They look great together. So tell me why you named Tipper as a development player.
Oh, I just think she's brilliant. I just was watching her and thinking I'm seeing Nick Cusack playing out there. It's just lovely to watch her. She just dances around the court, gets into the right positions, feeds her shooter really well. And, you know, I just love watching it. I love watching her skill. And she's a real competitor. Like, that's what I'm loving about her competitiveness in Adelaide. She's got that fire in her belly and she really wants to do well for the club. So to see her get her opportunity, because she didn't get on at the start, remember, it was the other way around. It was Cardwell with Lucy yes. Austin, who's another terrific young player. So Dwan and Cardwell nailing that combination, it's just, yeah, it's beautiful to watch. And Tracy, obviously being Cardwell's coach at Thunder, you know, had a bit to do with her. And I think she's probably assisted Tipper's confidence about playing with Cardwell and what to do. But Cardwell's also will not be shy in telling her what to do either.
Yes. I think that's the wonderful thing about Eleanor Cardwell. Now, you used to be at Thunderbirds yourself.
I did.
Are you pleased to see how well they're doing this season?
I am. I have to say they, you know, and they know that. I send messages to Tanya quite a lot and Kathy as well and Tracy. I know Tracy quite well too. So to see them doing well now makes my heart sort of jump with joy because it's important. South Australia is important to netball in Australia. It's got such a history and it was really annoying for many of us who, you know, as the national coach as well, I was concerned. But I knew they were doing all the right things with the juniors because through their pathway, they were winning everything. And they've always been strong in their junior pathways. So to see it hopefully translating, like Taylor Williams, like when I watched her play at 219 Junior Nationals, I was absolutely struck with her. So to see her getting her opportunity now, same with Lucy Austin and, you know, also Hannah Petty, and Hannah Petty's growing into the game now. And yeah, it's really lovely.
some of that success has come off the back of signing two Jamaican superstars to help out in defence. But imagine what it would have been like if, say, Sarah Clough, Maddie Proud and Maddie Turner had stayed in South Australia.
I know, but then that's the thing. You don't appreciate what is your own sometimes. And I think that's what all of us, you know, even in Victoria here, we've been brought up in a very strong system, but sometimes they just, you know, someone doesn't like you. It's nothing you can say. It's a confirmation bias. It's a human nature thing. So, you know, Shani had to go away to play well and be the personality that she is. And luckily she came to Adelaide where I was. And I was the same coaching wise. I got tossed out as well. So for me to get my opportunity in Adelaide with Jane Woodlands-Thompson, I'll be eternally grateful for that, because I don't think I would have got the Australian job without that.
Okay, let's talk about your Super Shot article, or Super Shit article, should we say. We can swear on this podcast.
Are we allowed to say that word?
We can say shit, I think, and Andy can bleep us if not. So when it comes to that article, I think, you know, you vent a lot of the frustrations that fans have had, loyal fans, I want to say, not the new ones we're supposed to be attracting with this new rule, but the ones that have stuck with netball through thick and thin and have seen the fantastic contests that netball can produce without a two-point shot in play.
Yes.
So I don't think there's anything new in here from you that I haven't heard from you before.
Come on, surely.
I did think the part about the sexism was interesting.
Oh, yes. I thought that was new.
Yeah, that was the part that sort of grabbed me. So we're talking about making a rule change to a sport, and something that you allude to is it shows that who really owns the sport and controls it. Can you elaborate a little bit on that?
Yeah, I mean, that's getting to the heart of the matter in my view, which I'm concerned about. And I know even in Linda Pierce's article, I think she refers to it a little bit. It's what you said before about honouring the past, like stop making us feel like we're, you know, museum artefacts. Actually bring us into the conversation and respect what we have to say. Now, we understand that sport goes ahead and people come and go in CEO positions. I know that very well. But the heart and the culture and the soul of a sport can be damaged if we try and tinker with it too much. Just look at, you know, Australian rules football. They play around with their rules all the time. You probably don't, not aware of it as much, Brit, but me being from Victoria, I'm well aware of it, and it annoys the crap out of the supporters here in Victoria, and they vent. And, you know, at the end of the day, the AFL has to take notice because they run the game. Now, that's the thing. Who runs our game? Netball. Now, we're going to a World Cup soon where we're going to play against all the other countries in the world that have qualified. You know, why do we think that this is the type of game that's going to take netball forward? How do we know that? Look at the ANZ Championship. It's had some absolute cracker matches over there. The Super League in England, you know, they've had some good matches, although I think some of them have been a bit of a yawn. You know, we've got to be mindful that we're part of an international community here. That's what I'm most concerned about. And not forgetting people like the umpires and how difficult that is for them to navigate this system of having to umpire a completely different game for 20 minutes a, you know, match. Imagine how difficult that is. And it's hard enough for them, as we know. You know, look at the other sports that have gone, you know, AFL's gone to four umpires now. Netball's been two for how many years? And in many ways, I thank netball for being that way, because if we over-umpire things too, then it might change the game significantly as well. So overall, the heart and soul of the game is being attacked, in my view. And that's why I had to put the little, well, it was really a jab to TV, and Fox could have got rid of the Super Shot, but it got taken in because there's a certain narrative and a certain group of administrators that still think it's the right way to go, which was the SSN Commission, which is no more.
So I'm going to challenge you a little bit here. So you've just said that AFL makes rule changes all the time, and so we see netball make a rule change. Why is it that the Super Shot is perhaps a little bit sexist, and these changes and evolutions of super netball is a little bit sexist, but those ones in AFL are different.
Completely different, because they run their game. It's not an international game.
Yeah.
So, and we've been we're a woman's game. We're a uniquely female game. It's as I try and remind everyone, we were born out of basketball. We're not basketball. That's why I go on about it all the time. Basketball has 2 points for their shots, and they call them shots, I think. I can't remember, but ours are actually goals. So it's actually 2 goals, not 2 points for a super shot. And it's that sort of, I think it's not respecting enough of the excellence of the past and what we've been able to create as a sport together with all our member nations around the world that really concerns me the most. You know, I've been to Namibia to see netball played. I don't think they could afford to put in a 2-point line. You know, that's really how first world, or whatever you want to call it, that's how poor some of the countries are. So, you know, are we leading the way? That's my question. I don't know. And to be fair, football is extraordinarily sexist in Australia. Extraordinarily. Just ask me who put up my hand for, you know, getting an application to apply for the North Melbourne football head coach position. I mean, I absolutely got slammed over it, but that wasn't the point at the end of the day. I did think I could do it, but it's hopefully leading the way so that women and girls feel empowered and they feel they can make a difference in the world.
We've still never really got any data about whether the game.
And that's the other thing, no data. Yes. Where is it? Where's the data? And don't tell me that data doesn't get screwed around and statistics don't get, as you know, misinterpreted, because just look at yourselves as analysts when you're looking at netball games, how you look at it completely differently to Erin Dalahunty or Linda Pierce or even myself now, who's one of my, you know, I consider myself to be one of the colleagues, even though yes. I'm a baby one, I'm still learning. you know, that's the thing with statistics and data. Like, people can screw it around and show what they want. And that's why we've got to question what's happening in, you know, how much money's being spent on the AFL in Tasmania. Now, that won't be popular, but you still have to ask the question. That's $240 million. Sorry, English listeners, but we're having a bit of a budget argument at the moment. That's going to go to football.
Especially when we know that Netball South Australia Stadium is in desperate need of funding.
Absolutely, Brittany. Like, nobody, when are they going to say that? Like, the Adelaide Oval was great. We had a gather round. I'll tell the English people we had this, and they copied completely off NRL, by the way, the AFL, because they have a magic round in Brisbane. So, you know, it's like a festival sport, which is great. And I think netball does that well in England. You know, they really do that well. I mean, Com Games is just magnificent, I thought, Birmingham. But what I was saying is that the South Australians haven't, and the Tassie, like Hobart, haven't had a new stadium for I don't know how long in netball. It's terrible. It's like built in the 1970s. Come on. There's half the population that pay taxes.
The last point I want to take to you on this Super Netball article is the umpire discussion. So I think you said something along the lines of, and please correct me with the right terminology here, that because of the way that we have different rules in Super Netball, the way that it's umpired means they're not accredited to then do World Netball Games. Is that right?
Basically, yes. What we're saying is they can't get accredited with their international badge on a Super Netball game. So that's a real problem. In the old days, yes, we could do it. Even in the ANZ Champs days, I think we could still do it, even though we had timeouts and things like that, which were different to the real rules, but that was okay. But this 2-point shot business has really created a us and them mentality for Australian umpires, and it's created a gulf also, which we've got to be mindful of in our talent pathways as well. Like the recent Nationals, I'm pretty sure they played normal netball rules. What's that going to do for our juniors of the future? And I was only just talking to one of my players from over in England that's, you know, flying her craft for one of the Super League teams. And she was saying to me, what do I need to do? And I said, she's a shooter. I said, make sure you show you can sink the long shots, because at the end of the day, that's what a lot of the coaches will be looking for. It has those knock-on effects. That's the thing. Do we actually realise what the unintended consequences are of this rule?
So when it comes to umpires getting accredited for these international games, are they having to then go and do extra work at a state level? Is that how they're getting through?
Yeah, they will do some, but they're not good enough. Those games aren't – they can get their badges on those games, but for your international, you would have to go and do a test match in another country, basically, that has to be in the top 12. So they have to go to New Zealand playing maybe Tonga, because they're not going to put, you know, somebody who's hasn't got quite their certificate yet to get that experience. So it is really, really difficult for those opportunities to come up. What's happening at the moment now with you, with the Pacific Series, is a way that they can, as long as the two competing countries are in the top 12.
Okay.
So they then can be assessed on that game and be judged as to whether they're going to get an international badge.
So we have Malawi here at the moment, and we also have Tonga, who both fit that bill. And we see Super Netball umpires up here at the moment participating in the umpiring and officiating of this series. So
yes, great. So that is their opportunity, and that's what's been created also for the umpires. So I applaud whoever it was. I think it's the federal government that's provided the money for this, because it's through their, you know, relationships.
DFAT.
Yeah. Which has been a great thing. And they've been a quiet supporter of Netball Australia for a long time. So I thank them for that.
Well, Lisa, I think we've covered everything possible.
Oh, Brittany, no, we haven't. You haven't asked me about the English team yet.
My last question for you was going to be, who do you think is the biggest country for us to watch? I think many of us have got our eyes firmly fixed on Jamaica, but New Zealand, as usual, are quietly going about their business behind the scenes. So I'd love to know who you think the biggest threat might be.
Well, they're all threats at the end of the day. Jamaica, yes, but they're not as unknown as they were now. So they're more known, and we play against them week in, week out. So I think they've become less of a, to be fair, that, you know, when they get together, they will be a threat, don't get me wrong, but they're not quite as scary as they were, and I think everyone's just looking forward to seeing them play. New Zealand are always a threat when you don't know what they're doing. It's a bit like 2019. It's very quiet over there, and they're quietly going about their business. And as I said to you, they're bringing in Jane Watson and Karen Berger, who's, you know, they're just awesome players. They've got Knowles, who's, you know, proven to be able to pinch a World Cup away. Cry for me.
And for us.
And
that
also,
was devastating to be there for that. I remember the aftermath of it.
Really hard. But like I said, you know, people don't know about all the background stuff that was going on as well. Mm. And I was really proud that we actually only lost by one. It could have been really worse. And we had a tough game against South Africa, which everyone thought was out of this world, but they just underrated how good South Africa are, you know, coached by a coaching legend in Norma Plummer. So, you know, it's very tight at the top, and England will come back strong, and they're quite good at tournaments. And hopefully, I think they've learned a bit, but I'm worried about how insular they are. I don't think they do enough exploring. Like Jamaica's finally done it. I mean, they did have Jill McIntosh in the past, but getting someone like Rob Wright's really made a huge difference. And, New Zealand will be tough.
Well,
who knows?
Malawi. Well, yes. Yep. There's some interesting
Zimbabwe
matches. Tonga, you know, even Tonga.
And South Africa, let's not forget.
Yeah, the home country, that's right. Well, Lisa, have we covered everything now?
Oh, pretty much, pretty much.
I think so. Thank you so much for joining us for such a lengthy chat and in-depth chat on the Netball Show. It's always wonderful to hear your insights, and I think we're all just so excited now. We have 3 months until that World Cup happens, and Australia desperately want their hands back on that trophy.
We certainly do.
The Netball Show is now also available via Sky HD, Sky Q and Sky Glass. Select sport and we're on the podcasts rail.